own home, and likely rely on their automobile for transportation. Who are you not hearing from today? Or at least not hearing enough from? Apartment dwellers? Families struggling to pay bills and house themselves? Affordable housing activists? Bike and pedestrian activists? Green space advocates? Sustainability thinkers? The design trades? And yes, developers. The narrative before you today is that evil developers are exploiting the city's friendly neighborhoods. I don't buy it. Certainly there is needed design review for these new buildings. I acknowledge that. But slapping on new parking requirements will not achieve this and will cost us all dearly. Thank you.
Thank you, Ted. Welcome.
My name is Ruben Däumling. I am here to oppose any further erosion of the city's existing policy on off-street parking for housing along transit corridors. I live in the Sunnyside neighborhood. I am a member of Portland Neighbors for Sustainable Development. It isn't as if we had to convince people in Portland not to have cars. According to the 2010 census, roughly one quarter of 24% of the East Side renters households in Multnomah County who live west of Southeast 82nd do not own cars. This number is rising. The most elegant solution to this whole circus would be to figure out ways to help or encourage those without cars to move into these apartments. We could even put the onus on the developer to figure out how to rent to this demographic. The next most elegant solution would be to implement a parking benefit district, whereby currently free on-street parking is managed in such a way that those who live on the block can always find parking. These systems already exist and work in other cities and neighborhoods. They generate funds that can be used by the neighborhoods themselves to further improve livability. I haven't heard any reasonable objections to either of these elegant solutions, but if you find yourselves unwilling or unable to pursue either, then I ask you not to weaken the current proposal to require modest amounts of off-street parking for buildings larger than 40 units. Thank you for your consideration and commitment to our city.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Alan Field. I live in the Richmond neighborhood, just a few blocks north of Division. And I urge the council to today adopt and make effective a minimum parking requirement. Between the original proposal and the proposed amendments, I'm in favor of the proposed amendments, but I do think they should be raised a little bit from the current proposed amendments to the level of 0.3, 0.35, and 0.4. And I do think that there needs to be a more robust cumulative impact component. If it can't be imposed today, then in the comprehensive plan process, it can be added. Since I was here last time testifying, there is yet another four-story building on Division with no parking. This time, a 74-unit building at 48th and Division. So by my count, that's 450 units times a 0.9 parking ratio found in the study. We're talking about 400 cars. You add in the destination restaurants, we're talking 500 plus cars in our neighborhood in just a few blocks, nine blocks. The proposed regs and amendments are a good start, but I really think there needs to be a better cumulative impact component based on density of units. You know, in Division, we've already reached the point of incredible density. The parking study shows there's already 65 to 85% parking utilization on 36th and 37th. And this last weekend, I walked 35th place, and it's 95% utilization and 105% on the other day I walked it.
Mr. Field, can I ask you a question? Because we've had a lot of internal discussions about how you might structure something that tackles the cumulative impact question. Do you have a thought on that that doesn't just have the perverse effect of applying the rules on the last development in and treat development in the same proximity differently?
Well, what I had proposed previously was a threshold. If there's already 300 units within three blocks, then have a bump up in the minimum parking requirement. But I don't know how to address your scenario of how people late to the game can't take advantage, but that's just the real estate market. You're late to the game, you can't buy the property. And relying on market forces, I don't think is the answer, because here in Portland, where we have an incredibly low vacancy rate, and Portland is the number one place people are moving to, young people in 20s and 30s moving to Portland to retire. These are not families. These are people willing to walk two to three blocks in these apartments. And the developers are not passing on the savings to the renters. The two of the three most expensive buildings with highest rent have no on-site parking, and two of the cheapest buildings have on-site parking. So it's a fallacy to argue this is increasing. This is, you can lower the rent by not having parking. The demand is so high for apartments, developers are not passing that on. The normal parking ratio is 1:1. Therefore, I think a fair compromise is higher than the current proposal of not 0.25, but raise it to 0.3, 0.35, and 0.4. At the March RNA meeting, Kirk Schultz from Sierra Architects, he even said 0.25 was too low for the amount of density that exists on the division west of Cesar Chavez. The RNA recommended 0.35 to 0.5 for 20 to 40 and 0.5 to 0.6 for over 40. Rose City recommended 0.25 for 20 to 40 and 0.5 over 40. I would just urge in the long-term process, add in a better cumulative impact analysis and decouple the parking ratio from TriMet schedules. They're going to cut their service 70% in 12 years, according to the manager. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, members of the council. My name is Michael Robinson. I'm here today on behalf of Dennis Sackhoff, who may be affected by these amendments. First thing I want to say is we support Amendment 6, the changes to the main entrance requirement. That makes a lot of sense. We don't support the Amendment 4. We think you should follow the Planning and Sustainability Committee recommendation. So I have three comments today. First of all, we agree with what Planning and Sustainability Commission Vice Chair Rudd had to say in her letter and with Commission Member Shapiro's testimony here today that you should continue to explore a parking permit program with PBOT. It makes a lot of sense. It's worked in other areas of the city. And the PBOT testimony at the March 12th PSC hearing had a lot of merit to it. They had a lot of good suggestions. Secondly, we urge you not to adopt these amendments immediately. They may have some merit, and you may want to adopt them, but with, especially given the number of amendments that have been proposed here today, we would urge you to have a little more opportunity for testimony and thought about them, not to mention the fact that they should be applied prospectively. You don't intend and don't want to capture people in the process that hadn't anticipated these amendments. And lastly, the amendments shouldn't be adopted or directed to any particular project or development. They need to be based on good, thoughtful policy, which is what I've seen this council engage in. So if you choose to adopt these amendments, we ask that you to do so prospectively so that you don't inadvertently apply them to projects in the process. That's all I have today. I thank you for your time, and I'll give my testimony to your recorder.
Thank you.
If I could, Mayor. Mr. Councilor, if we were to follow your recommendation on Amendment 6 and structure it so that it did apply to anyone who would be seeking a permit in the next 10 days, I do you have a position on that?
We would support that. I don't want to talk specifically too much about the opinion in Richmond Neighbors for Responsible Growth v. Portland, but it's clear that the City Council didn't intend that there be entrances above the ground floor to individual apartment units. So I know Mr. Sackhoff wants to provide retail floors, but with the code as written, you simply can't do it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for your time today.
The next four are Kathy Lambert, Brian Posewitz, Eli Spivak, and Gary Davenport, and they'll be followed by Julie Garver, Richard Lishner, Doug Klotz, and Justin Wood.
Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and City Commissioners, for allowing me to speak to you today. My name is Kathy Lambert, and I am the owner of Division Hardware, located at 37th and Division, right across the street from the proposed 81-unit apartment complex. I urge you to pass the amendment to change the requirements for developers to provide parking for projects with 41 or more units. It needs to be done immediately so that the developer at the 37th Street project will be required to provide some parking for the people moving into the building. As it is, developers are just buying up any and all available property to put up these monstrosities with no consideration at all to the livability of the neighborhood. It's only a money-making proposition. This can't be allowed to continue if we want to preserve our family neighborhoods. Once these projects are completed, they are going to be around for many, many years. They will not go away. Is this what we really want in our neighborhoods? There is a matter of building in conjunction with the existing neighborhood, however. However, Dennis Sackhoff has gone way overboard in the design of this complex that's going up at 37th and Division. This just does not fit the neighborhood. It does not belong here. This is not being very responsible. It needs to have at least some provision for parking. This amendment will not solve all the issues involving the projects going on throughout Portland, but it will be a step in the right direction to require the developers to include at least some parking for the units above 41. You were all elected by the people of Portland to carry out the work of making this a city we can be proud of and not be swayed by the special interests of developers who are here to fleece our neighborhoods and put money in their pockets. I urge you to pass these proposed amendments and put it into effect immediately. If you are worried about Sackhoff bringing a lawsuit against the city of Portland and winning, you must not have much confidence in the city attorney's ability to win this case. Or is the case of Sackhoff buying off people in charge of making these policies for the city of Portland? Who do you work for? The people who make up our family neighborhoods, our developers who insist on buying up all the land to put up these gigantic buildings in residential neighborhoods? This amendment must be voted on immediately and put into effect immediately in order to preserve our livability and our neighborhoods, or what we have left of them.
Thank you, Kathy. Thanks very much.
Mayor Hales and members of the council, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Brian Posowitz. I'm a resident of the Selwood neighborhood, and I have just become interested in this issue in a process of attending neighborhood association meetings in my neighborhood. There's basically two controversial apartment projects in Selwood, one with no parking, one with some parking. I have no financial or property interest in any of this, but I am interested in seeing Portland continue to grow in a smart and thoughtful way. As this issue has unfolded, I have done some reading about the policies behind the existing code not to require parking for certain apartment buildings in certain zones. I think the goals behind those policies are very, very important, even compelling, and that the policies to further those goals are pretty well thought out. And I could sort of go through all the goals, but I'm sure they're well known to you. And basically, I support the concepts of sustainability, encouraging auto-free lifestyle, and affordable housing. It had to be anticipated that when this policy got implemented on the ground, that there would be some negative effects. I don't see how anybody can be surprised by that, and that those negative effects would stimulate a lot of complaints. However, I think if you are looking for development that doesn't have any negative impacts and doesn't generate any complaints, that's no development at all or something close to it. I think what has to be done is to say, let's look at these impacts. And it seems to me right now that the impacts are really anticipated impacts. I don't know that anybody can't park all of a sudden. But I think you have to look at the negatives and compare them to the positives and say, are the negatives so significant that they outweigh the policy goals of the existing code? And in my mind, that the negatives that I've heard don't justify erosion of the policies behind the existing code. On the parking issue, I find it kind of interesting that the people who are complaining about future residents and businesses using parking on the public right-of-way are people who are currently using parking on the public right-of-way. So if you say anybody new has to pay to park off the public right-of-way, you're essentially taking a public resource, public parking, you're allocating it to the existing residents and businesses based on the fact that they were there first. And I guess first come, first serve is one way to allocate a resource, but I don't know that it's necessarily the most thoughtful or efficient way to allocate a resource. And I know I also want to say, remember that in the background, we still purport to have some semblance of a free market out there, and that sometimes developers will provide parking even though they're not required to. At the Neighborhood Association meeting last night, we just heard from a person who was putting in a 4 or 5 unit complex and is providing a parking space for each unit on Tacoma Street. And we asked him why. He said, so I can rent the units. So keep in mind there's a free market there. And also the free market, I think, can take care of a lot of the parking problems that people are anticipating as well. And I see my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Yes.
Hello, my name is Eli Spivak. Thank you for listening to our testimony, Mayor Hales and the Commission. I am a small developer general contractor through my company, Orange Splot. Done development on my own for 8 years, and before that with affordable housing nonprofits for about a dozen. And I came to speak about parking, but I'll say just for a moment about the perception that the city might change the rules on a project midway through. I just want to share that for 8 years I've been doing developments, every development has required a lot of personal equity and a personal guarantee on a loan from a construction lender worth significantly more than my net worth. And I think that the idea that, I mean, it's a volatile market out there, things can change, but the city should not change the rules. That would provide a chilling effect on anyone contemplating a new development, one that people like or one that people might not like. And it would give me pause, frankly, to go into a project where I could potentially have to do a major change and lose everything I got. So I just want to share that as a developer's perspective, albeit smaller projects, but even larger ones, people are putting personal guarantees on these loans. It can't be a shifting scale in terms of the city permit process. Speaking to parking, I am a big fan of the current rules. Back in 2005, I did a development where we utilized that 500-foot exemption and did a 9-unit development. It was market rate. The units sold for, you know, $80,000, $90,000. That was in large part because we didn't have to build parking for those homes. And we ended up doing a second phase in what had been the historic parking. Those units sold $200,000, a little bit more. But that's relatively market rate housing made part because of that exemption at a location where otherwise we would have had to leave a lot of parking spaces available. Since then, I've done an 8-unit development, permanently affordable housing, once again using that exemption, both of those right on the number 4 bus line. So I think it's a great policy. I hope the city doesn't change it. I think that in the bigger market, and now doing a 16-unit development with 22 spaces of parking. It's a different location, and the parking is needed in that situation. I'm mentioning this because I think that the market can take care of this situation. For decades, it's not been the zoning code that's forced developers to build more parking. It's largely been their market of buyers and residents and their underwriters, the lenders who are financing the project. I've been multiple times pushed by lenders to provide more parking than it otherwise would have done. And in the past 1 or 2 years, the pendulum has shifted the other direction, clearly. And perhaps it's overshot. My construction lender says she's not going to finance a larger development with no parking in it. She's worried that some of the ones going up might not be able to achieve the rents that they hope to achieve, and there'll be an overshoot. I don't believe the city of Portland should be putting its thumb on the scale of that market in favor of more parking, or maximum parking for that matter. I think that should be determined by the market. The market will make a correction. And in the meantime, we've got lots of overparked developments. If you have a car, there's plenty of options for you. So my recommendation for the council is to either go with the PIC recommendation as a reasonable compromise or go in the other direction and remove parking maximums and minimums. Thank you.
Thanks, Eli. Thanks. Welcome.
My name is Gary Davenport. I'm here representing ONRG, Overlook Neighbors for Responsible Growth, and I live one block from a proposed no parking complex on the northeast corner of Overlook Park. Thank you for letting me testify today. I urge you in the strongest possible terms to take action to both pass and implement the amendments before you into law. I further urge you to pass the potential amendments numbering 1 through 5. Today you've heard and will hear from critics who oppose passage and immediate implementation of these amendments. To them I say, passage and implementation today will not impede the progress of responsible urban growth. The quality of new high-density developments will be enhanced, not compromised. This will not raise rental rates. Rental rates will continue to be determined by the market. However, passage and implementation today sends a strong message, actually a number of strong messages. It puts in place a more reasonable and moderate approach to infill apartments. It holds developers to a higher standard. It protects neighborhoods from a 30-day fire sale rush by developers to permit and erect no parking behemoths throughout the city. Most importantly, it sends a message to developers, the city planner, and the bureaus that the city council takes a stand for a more inclusive and responsive form of city government, a city council that believes that existing neighborhoods should also have a voice in forming our future. I'd like to leave you with the following thought. Today, I remind everyone that we are still only at the beginning of Portland's urban renewal process. During this no parking struggle, groups on all sides, including those in city government, the neighborhoods, the development community, bicycle advocates, the aging and disabled communities, and other concerned citizens have all worked hard to become increasingly more informed and aware of zoning issues, the internal workings of our city and state government, and issues pertaining to urban planning and urban development. Moving forward, it shouldn't take an act of city council to get something done in a timely manner. I'm hopeful that BPS and city council will explore ways to leverage the collective wisdom that each of these groups has to offer, so each can offer a stronger voice in getting problems addressed in a sensible and timely fashion. Thank you.
Thanks, Terry. Thank you all. Thanks very much.
Next four are Julie Garver, Richard Lischner, Doug Klotz, Justin Wood, and they'll be followed by Jeff Fish, Karen Carlson, Rick Michelson, and Steve Stoles.
Hi. Hello, my name is Julie Garver, and I work for Innovative Housing. And Innovative Housing is a small nonprofit apartment developer. We develop for both affordable units and mixed-income units. When we've been developing in the Portland area since 1984. We support the original parking amendment for one space per four units. The tiered plan is somewhat problematic because if you build slightly more units, you're able to make them more affordable because there's an economy of scale. So we build a lot of 50 to 60 units, and so we like the original proposal at one space per four units. I also recommend giving some serious consideration to the off-site parking plan. I think that land values are too high in Portland for people to actually tear structures down and make surface parking lots. And it would be nice if we could be creative about this parking thing because we need it. And to have spaces go unutilized nearby would exacerbate the situation. Also, we would suggest that you exempt historic buildings. It's very difficult to reutilize historic buildings and for adaptive reuses. You have seismic, you have a lot of code requirements that are all very needed, and these buildings, you know, we don't have very many of them, and they add a lot of character to our neighborhood, so we would recommend exempting them. And then lastly, we really recommend that you use care in how these are implemented. Buildings and projects that are in permit or under construction, it's very difficult to make large-scale changes. It would be very difficult for us as an affordable housing developer to make a multi, you know, a couple hundred thousand, several hundred thousand dollar change in the middle of a project or while it's in permitting. And so we suggest care with how it's implemented. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor.
Yes, please.
Julie, thank you for your testimony ahead of this. And for the planning folks who are here, is it possible? I think Ms. Garber is correct in that conversions of historic buildings would also be subject to this. Can I see nods or shake? Yes, they would. So could you be working on a potential amendment to add to the packet later to exempt historic buildings, conversions of historic buildings? Thank you.
So if you're converting a historic building that hasn't been housing to housing, then these rules would apply. Yeah, okay, good point. Thank you.
My name is Richard Lischner. I am a resident of at 2545 Southeast 37th. Half a block below Division and half a block from the 81-unit apartment building. I happen to be an architect, but I am a resident. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, thank you for allowing me to speak to you today. This has been quite a roller coaster, and I hope you will successfully end this portion of the ride today. We all have our parts to play in these dramas, and I would like to thank the organizers of Richmond Neighbors for Responsible Growth and our lawyer, all of whom made our expected victory possible. My small role, for better or worse, has been that of a rabble-rouser, and there's a rabble here today, speaking truth to power even when those in power seemingly do not want to exercise it. Last time we met, I know I made you uncomfortable with my challenge to stop the rape of my neighborhood. Your silent response was that you couldn't do anything about this project. Then we won our case before LUBA, which allowed you to do the right thing and bring this project under the newly expected rules to govern these buildings. The developer, and your own bureaucracy then tried to silently reverse our victory, and you have finally responded to those efforts. So I'd like to extend my sincere thanks in anticipation of your immediate revisions to the zoning code today, which will force this developer to modify this building and accept some responsibility for dealing with growth and change his project will bring to our neighborhood. If you somehow shirk your responsibilities, I, of course, reserve my right to scream bloody murder. The important thing to understand that as you decide immediately today and do not put this off for further study and amendments, you must bring this process to an end to ensure that 37th Street falls under the new rules. They can be modified later after further reflection. Please do not listen to those who are arguing on principle or hopes for a car-free future. Come and walk our streets, and you will not need an architect to show you how we will have to accommodate change already. If we win today, we still have to deal with an oversized monstrosity with only 60 or so units instead of 81. Most of these tenants will have cars, and they will clog our streets. So I will argue that the 40-unit threshold should be reduced to 20 or 25 or 30, because you know that we will likely see projects with one less unit so as to avoid parking. Also, raise the percentages so that 25% is the floor rather than the starting percentage. The cumulative effect of all these buildings, most with no parking, will still swamp the neighborhood. Now, of course, this particular project is cumulative all by itself. If you have stopped the rape of my neighborhood, you must understand that it is still under assault. I ask that these regulations should be followed immediately by two conjoint efforts that can mitigate the simple auto storage problem, a neighborhood sticker program that will allow existing residents to buy the right to park on our streets. A new smart park, planned and built soon, will allow residents of the new spaceless apartment buildings to park overnight. These steps must be taken to ensure the unmitigated damage of these projects like these are somewhat contained. Throughout this process, I have been troubled by the deference paid to developers. Everyone deserves respect here, and developers are not by definition evil. But when we confront those whose greed, stupidity, and arrogance knows no bounds, we need and expect allies in City Hall. Thank you for your vote today.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Doug Klotz. I live in the Richmond neighborhood, two blocks from Hawthorne, and I do have people parking in front of my house from time to time. I'm here in support of the Portland Neighbors for Sustainable Development. You've seen our letter. I just want to reiterate that we support Portland is a vibrant, sustainable city where you can walk, bike, take the bus, or drive your car, and where there's higher density along transit streets and in neighborhood centers so you can walk to places, bike to places, and have there be some activity there. You need to have the density to support those businesses. We feel that parking requirements work against this vision and mitigate against meeting the comp plan goals. So we oppose parking requirements at all. We've realized that there's some compromise necessary here, so we have supported to an some of us, not completely, the Portland Planning Sustainability Commission recommendations, which is 0.25 spaces for buildings over 40 units. Now there's other political realities perhaps coming down the pike with the new proposal by Commissioner Fish. I am concerned specifically where we dropped to 30 units. I'm concerned about the effect of driveways on retail streets, on the sidewalk on the retail streets. Once you put a driveway in, that driveway is going to be like 42 feet wide, including the wings, take away up to 3 parking spaces. And on a 30-unit building, you may have like 5 spaces that it accesses. So you're not gaining much, and you're interrupting the pedestrian flow. You're interrupting even street traffic to have cars coming in and out of this driveway. You take away space for street trees, space where it could be sidewalk cafe tables. Just having all these driveways on a retail street is not a good thing. I propose, which I sent to you folks, that we exempt buildings that are mid-block from the 30 to 40 threshold requirements to at least eliminate these buildings that wouldn't have much parking anyway. I'm told by the planning staff that that's difficult. It's difficult to write that code language in a quick manner, which apparently this process requires. So another alternative would be to just eliminate the 30 to 40 step and, in trade-off, change the ratio for the 40 to 50 from 0.25 to 0.30. I mean, it's a trade-off. I'm not that comfortable with it, but this is a way to at least save the pedestrian environment on those streets. So it's a compromise, and you know, I'm not that comfortable with it, but just to put that out there.
Mr. Plotz?
Yes.
One of the issues we're going to be discussing is whether to allow for developers to purchase off-site parking. Do you think, I mean, is that a significant issue in your mind? Is it possible that you might have 30 to 40 unit buildings that, mid-block buildings that could buy off-site parking without, and thus avoid having the driveways?
Well, that would certainly be preferable to having the driveways on the transit street, yes. I'm not sure if that's going to happen all the time. But especially if on the smaller projects where they're doing 32 units, they're buying a 50 by 100 foot lot or 75 by 100 foot lot. I don't know if they would want to additionally, you know, purchase a lot somewhere else for the parking. I don't know how that would work, the economics of that would work.
And do you think that the 30 to 40, are mid-block buildings more likely to be in the 30 to 40 range than in the 40 and above range?
They're more likely to be in that range than in the 60 to 70, but it kind of depends on the block pattern in the neighborhood, too. But I'm thinking that, in general, the corner buildings might tend to get larger, because the corner sites tend to, you know, people tend to aggregate sites on the corners rather than the mid-block.
Thank you. Thanks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and fellow commissioners. My name is Justin Wood, and I'm here on behalf of the Home Builders Association of Metropolitan Portland. In addition to being on staff at the Home Builders Association, I'm also an infill builder here in Portland and have been so for 13 years. I'm serving on the Comprehensive Plan Housing Task Force, and I also helped several of the volunteers here on the Citywide Apartment Task Force. I'm here today to ask you to support the amendments as proposed by planning staff and recommended by the Planning and Sustainability Commission. These amendments are the results of careful study weighing the impact of desired parking against the transit and density goals of the city. Lots of 40 or more, as the planning staff has stated, are typically larger corner lots, which do not have the challenges that the smaller mid-block lots do. I believe I sent City Council, the City Recorder, and the commissioners a diagram that we had in one of our engineers do of a typical 5,000 square foot mid-block lot, and by the time you provided the necessary access in and off of the lot, you lost half of your street parking. So typically, if you would put five spaces in, you might lose two or three on-street public spaces at the expense of getting five private spaces on site. Using a number less than 40, just because I get the feeling that there's been some push for a number less than 40 simply because it's less than 40. And I think the planning staff has done their job and their due diligence to not only weigh the feasibility of the construction, but all the reasoning behind that number. If the numbers changed, I would ask that a little bit more consideration is given to what the impacts really are and have staff provide some more feedback on that. I'd hate for us to make a decision today without carefully studying all the consequences that planning staff has already done. Additionally, an unintended consequence may be that there's no guarantee that a building requires the developer parking provided, that the tenants will stay there and pay for that space. In most instances, the developer would charge a premium for those parking spaces, and if the tenants choose to not pay to park on those spaces, they would still park in the neighborhood. I've heard some conversation about requiring a parking permit problem, and I don't know all the ramifications of that, but that might be a way to help with that situation. The city and metro area has goals of decreased carbon emissions, decreased auto usage, increased bicycle and transit usage, and increases in city density. These apartment projects help to move us closer to our ultimate city goals. I also serve on several committees at Metro, and I know that the City of Portland is working with Metro on different climate smart scenario projects that help to mandate programs that promote health and walking importance and decreased auto usage. Let's check my time here.
Just wrap up. That's okay.
Okay. I just wanted to say that as far as the amendments that I've I were opposed to the off-site parking amendment because I think that if there's empty lots not being used, they should be fully utilized. And I was just to offer to Commissioner Fish, you had made a comment about tax abatement on rentals units. As somebody who has built for tax abatement for sale, I can say part of the problem with the tax abatement on the rental is it's fairly cumbersome, and it's a lot more difficult to do it on the rental units than it is on the for sale units. And I think there's some tweaks to the program that could make it easier for rental.
Love to work with you on that. And even though your time's expired, if I could just ask a question. You focused your comments on the planning sustainability proposal, and you offered a comment on the Amendment 1, which would lower the threshold to 30 to 40 with a 1 to 5. Could you comment on what you think of the 1 to 3 for 50 and above and whether you can support that?
I'm more flexible on the ratios above 40 because I think there's sound reason for why 40 is a magic number. I think if the council's discretion is to change the ratios on numbers from 40 to 50 and 50 and above, I think there's more reasoning behind that, and I could support that at some levels.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much.
The next four are Jeff Fish, Karen Carlson, Rick Michelson, and Steve Stoles. And they'll be followed by Rex Burkholder, Alan Durning, Amy Anderson, and Bob Wright.
Welcome. Mr. Mayor and commissioners, my name is Jeff Fish. I'm president of Fish Construction. I'm also a member of the Development Review Advisory Committee. I speak on behalf of myself and not the committee. I also speak on behalf of myself and not necessarily for our company because the previous speaker is my son-in-law and his views and my may be slightly different. Unlike many of my colleagues, I've never built nor do I plan in my career to build anything that doesn't have one parking unit one parking spot per unit. And I'm going to let you deal that issue. You got it before you right now. What concerns me more are two things. One is the density issue. I have faced neighbors for 40 years over density, mostly on single family, although I've built a larger project, up to 52 units. Parking is a big issue for people. My personal view is that if you're going to put high density in, keep it in the Pearl, keep it in the South Waterfront. I don't believe it necessarily should be out in areas on 39th and Division or other residential neighborhoods. I have people give me a bad time over the fact I'm putting two houses on a 50 by 100 lot, much less 20, 30, 40 units on a lot. But part of what I want to address is the general public. The general public needs to wake up to what Senate Bill 100 and Senate Bill 101 did, enforcing density. And I also want them to understand that we as developers play within the rules that are written. We don't write the rules. And I'd also like to clarify that in my 40 years, I've never heard of a public official being paid off, whether you start with a building inspector and work your way all the way up the mayor. I've never heard of anybody ask those people to be paid off, and I've never heard of anybody suggesting they be paid off. And I'd like to clear that issue up because I think there's a lot of people who think that the developers push this stuff through. We react to what was written, mostly dictated by Metro, and I ask those people to look at what's happened to our density issue. The other major concern I have is the fact that this building permit has been pulled. I understand what Luba did, but I don't believe that you want to be pulling building permits and not allowing the developers to move forward. That's a precedent that I don't think should be happen a second time. Basically, a building permit is a contract, and a contract has consideration of something of value, an offer of acceptance, legal purpose, capable parties, and meeting in the minds. And I don't want to see this a precedent down the road of building permits being pulled for any reason, business license, any kind of permit, contractual agreements between the city and private parties. So I'll close with my remarks at that point.
Jeff, if there's any lingering conflict between you and your son-in-law, I just want to let you know the city does have a mediation service. It's free of cost to all neighbors.
And Jeff, I appreciate many of your comments. I just want to clarify that the Luba reversal is the reason that building permit is not moving forward. So that's, as you and I both know, is an unusual circumstance.
I understand that, but I also was led to understand, am I incorrect, that it's been held up because of something besides that, too, or not? Is that my mistake?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
You want that distributed, Karen?
Okay. Great. Hi. Karen Carlson. I am a resident in 19th and Northrop Northwest. Thank you for letting me come and testify. I was doing a little show and tell. I want to talk about a project that's a little bit different than the projects that the study has been doing. This is a project that's a block from my house, and it's in an area that is a mixture of light manufacturing, residents, retail, services. It's an EX zone, so it's a little different than the residential and commercial zones that the study has done. So the first page shows that there's a new 104-unit apartment building being built with no off-street parking between Overton and Northrop, and yes, it is right by the streetcar stop. And the first shows to you all the white spaces are the number of white spaces and the 28 block faces that are available today for long-term parking. The red are... So today, about 9:30 before I headed into the office, went around and looked to see how many of those are available on any work day, and there were four. But pretend that all of the businesses and that are there now using those spaces were gone, you would still have, basically because there's timed parking and there's places you can't park, driveways, that if, just quickly, let's just move to the third page where under the present code, if you assume 70% car ownership, and I think that's been one of the numbers that's been bandied around a lot, you know, sometimes a little more or a little bit less, that would mean 73 cars are parked on the street. And that takes up 20 of the 28 block faces within this area, which is pretty significant. So the last page simply shows that under the proposed code, there would only be 47 parked cars on the street, which I think is certainly much better. The problem in this area that's different is there are businesses here that both their employees and people who come for the services rely on street parking to do that. I think you're going to see as this project develops and fills up that there is going to be a higher demand for timed parking for these folks in this neighborhood, or these businesses aren't going to survive. The reason I'm bringing this up is I think this parking issue is a whole lot more complex, and although I am personally, like, very much in favor of density, alternative transportation, I do think we do need to take a look at requiring some off-street parking for developments. I have to admit that even though I read code a lot, I have no idea how a project in an EX zone is going to be affected by the code, so somebody hopefully will tell me at some point in time. Bottom line, I think we need to do something, but I also think we need to take a much more in-depth look over time to see what the real answer is on some of this off-street parking.
So this is very helpful in terms of the Northwest parking issues, but mm-hmm. my understanding that this doesn't apply in the EX zone is that, yes, I'm seeing nods, so mm-hmm. it doesn't fix the problem that you just brought to our attention.
Excuse me, it does apply in the EX zone.
It does apply in the EX
zone? He must have read the code better.
But not in Northwest.
Oh, good.
No, you're not. Oh, good. You want some off-street parking. So I agree. There's a lot of complex parking challenges.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for doing an extraordinary amount of work to go check this out for us. I appreciate that. Make sure I understand your key here. That is the blue short-term time-limited spaces. You didn't indicate whether they were occupied or not. The point is they're short-term.
Actually, on any given day, they're occupied. This morning, they were all occupied.
Okay.
And I know that because if I leave my house in the morning, I come back in the middle of the day to pick up something, I'm hopeful that there's a timed parking space available, because otherwise there's nothing else.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this is very helpful. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Rick Michelson, and I'm part of the reason why you're here today. In 1975, I was noticing the number of teardowns in Northwest Portland for parking, so I pushed a move in the CS zone to allow development there to take place without parking so that we didn't end up with 50% building, 50% parking. In 1990, when I was on the Planning Commission, I was involved in the vote that then extended that to all the transit corridors. I voted yes. I believe Commissioner Fritz actually voted against it at that point, telling us that we were going to have problems down the road, and sure enough, here we are.
I had forgotten that. That's very gracious of you.
I have about 2 hours of ideas, but I'm going to sum this down to 3 or 4 minutes or 2 minutes of specifics about the code in front of you. The first is I really do believe that the threshold should be 20 units, not 40. At 20 units, you're getting the kind of smaller scale development that's appropriate in the neighborhoods without parking. The mid-block projects will typically be on a 5,000 square foot lot, not a 10,000 square foot lot. It's really hard to get two 5,000 square foot lots mid-block together, which means that they would have about 18 units and exempt under that limit as well. I think the idea of off-site parking is essential to the long-term viability of our neighborhoods and having a combined planned parking area. But I think it's premature to allow it any place except in existing parking lots. There is a fear that it might spread and lead to teardowns if you were going to allow the shared parking in new or off-site parking in new parking lots rather than just in the existing. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about the main entrance issue, about whether it belonged on the main pedestrian street or around the corner. It was intentionally a requirement to have the main entrance to the building, even if it's an apartment building, on the pedestrian street to activate the pedestrian corridor. The code was never intended, and I don't think it says that every unit has to have an entrance on the street. It just says the building has to have one.
Right.
So if you want to change the policy, that's one thing, but understand that this never has called for each of the apartment units to have their own entrance on the main street. Finally, what would I do? I would start looking at parking in a more nuanced neighborhood way. I would begin to develop a system that allowed developers who were doing certain things in certain neighborhoods to reduce the amount of parking by first starting with one space per unit, then giving a one-for-one credit for any units in there that were affordable, giving a 0.5-for-1 unit credit for any units that were less than 400 square feet because those are going to be the small units, giving the developer credit for the parking along the curb that they're not taking out because that's also useful parking, and then allowing the developer, if they want to reduce the parking even further, to do a neighborhood parking study. And if the parking utilization in the neighborhood is less than 85%, they would be allowed to add some additional load to that until you get to the 85% level. Commissioner Fish, I think you asked a question about, well, what happens to the last guy in, and there's no parking available. It's really no different than any other kind of development, like water service or anything else. If you're the last guy in and there's no water service available to you, you can't build until it's fixed. Parking is a resource just like those other resources. Thank you.
Yeah, you're a great resource. Thank you. And we appreciate it. But that cumulative impact question is a tough one on these issues. Another tough one is that we have generally tried to do things by code rather than force people to do site-specific studies. So I think a number of us would be wary of crossing that line of some developments have to do this kind of studies, others don't. Here we go. There's no certainty. Comment on that as somebody who's, somebody who's been on the Planning Commission and thought a lot about these questions.
Well, I think those studies at a small scale are not that difficult to do. In fact, we require them for land divisions. We require them for industrial developments. You'll notice it was the last one of the rank in here, so that if the developer really wanted to cut his parking even further, he'd have to take some extra steps. Ideally, parking would be dealt with on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. I think at some point we ought to be looking at some of these neighborhoods and combining the surface parking into small parking structures that serve the residents and the businesses around them. But it's going to take us a while to get there. I also think that if you're asking for a waiver for parking, you ought to pay a $3,000 system development charge that can be used for either providing neighborhood parking or pedestrian improvements in the district. The $3,000 is the cost of a surface space. So I think our purpose is to make public policy, not necessarily to save developers money. And that way, that money could be used more effectively.
Rick, I just wanted to make one observation. What we hear from for-profit and nonprofit developers is that certainty is important. And so the concern that I have, because I'm actually drawn to this idea that the cumulative effect creates other problems beyond what we potentially address through these code changes. But let's say someone assembles some land and it takes them a couple years to get their financing, and they plan one kind of building. In the interim, a couple other buildings pop up, which bump them up the ladder in terms of requirements because of the cumulative effect. I think we have to be very careful that we're not fixing one problem at the expense of the kind of certainty which allows investors and developers to create housing that's particularly in the affordable end. So that's a concern I have, and I appreciate your point, but I haven't heard a proposal that deals with the cumulative impact that also doesn't come at the expense of certainty for purposes of development.
Well, and hopefully we'll have one during the comp plan update. Yep. This is not something we're doing today. The other answer to that is that's exactly what happens in the market. The last person to start building condominiums before the bust wasn't able to proceed.
I understand, but we're talking about changing the rules that apply, not necessarily private risk of capital, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I think you should never change the rules after somebody has started down the process legitimately.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And I just want to clarify, please, Rick. You, as an infill developer, feel that the amendment that Commissioner Fish proposed for the is going to still work for the mid-block, that they still won't be required to put parking on the smaller sites mid-block?
I think that's true.
Because they're generally going to be less than 30 units?
I think they're generally going to be less than 30 units. I think they're generally going to be less than 20 units. We have 200-foot blocks. A developer who had acquired 100 feet in the middle of that block is going to make their best effort to acquire either that 50 feet or that 50 feet before they start developing. So the only thing I think you'll see on the smaller 5,000 square foot lots is smaller projects under 20 units that would be below any of the thresholds proposed.
Thank you. And I also share your opinion that we were intending to have a front door entrance on the transit streets. However, the Land Use Board of Appeals seems to disagree with us. So we'll fix it in the next round.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Stolze. I am the former mayor of the City of Tualatin. I am the chairman of the Professional Remodelers Organization in Metropolitan Portland, and I'm here on my own behalf. But I found this to be a very interesting day, and I find that you're trying to implement a very serious policy in a very short period of time. And I think, in my opinion, you need a lot more time to discuss this. But essentially, what I am here to oppose is implementation of any type of an ordinance that would be applied to permits that are already existing and have been issued or in process. All of us, as builders, developers, we go through your building department and your process of finding out what the rules are, what the regulations are, doing everything we can to meet those rules, and finally meeting them and getting a permit issued. Only to find out that down the road, whoops, the city changes its mind and we're going to add something new. I think I've heard a couple of times people say that this would send a dire message. It definitely would. Portland would be an unstable place to work. Bankers would not be able to finance projects because they could not depend on the permits being valid. So I think there's a lot to consider here. I think there's a lot of impact for a lot of people. And I think, personally, my opinion as an outsider, you need to take a lot more time to discuss this issue. This is not an emergency, and it shouldn't have to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to declare a 5-minute stretch break, so the council will be recessed until 4 o'clock.
Thank you.
Bear with us.
Are you going to call the elected official first?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are there
elected? We have Bob's
here. Oh, I'm sorry. There he is. Since we've reacquired a quorum, we'll restart the hearing. I was going to extend the courtesies to an elected official and call Metro Councilor Bob Stacey up, but he has politely informed me that he's here as Citizen Stacey, not Councilor Stacey. So he's scrupulously observing the proprieties, and we'll see you up here later. Thank you for being here. So the next four are already in place, and please begin.
The only testifier today who is not one of your constituents. I hail from the fair city of Seattle, where I direct Sightline Institute, the Northwest's largest progressive think tank and a champion for the last 20 years for making the Pacific Northwest a global model of sustainability. I come to Portland probably 5 or 6 times a year, and we do a tremendous amount of work in Oregon, as in Washington and British Columbia. This trip, it's a little bit like I've arrived in some nightmare alternative reality version of Portland, where the City Council is debating the particular details of the regulations by which we will mine tar sands from city parks. I am deeply disheartened to hear this debate today about backing away from Portland's leadership position towards letting the, which has been for the last decade, to move steadily towards letting the market decide how much parking will be provided and letting the market manage the supply and demand for parking. I am disheartened because the rest of the Northwest and much of the country has long looked to Portland for its leadership on progressive, sustainable urbanism, on providing alternatives to the automobile, and providing and mixing equity effectively, equity and affordability effectively with environmental responsibility. There are a set of solutions for the problems that your communities are enduring, and the problems are the consequence of the several decades of progress in reducing the off-street parking requirements. The problem, the solutions are well described in this 800-page tome by Donald Shoup. The difficulty is that you as leaders need to lead your community beyond the controversy of change, right? We are used to managing, we have for far too long tried to manage parking problems through the land use code, which is a little bit like trying to steer a car by banking the roads. The better solution is to use a steering wheel. The steering wheel in this case is parking management policies, parking benefit districts, parking pricing, mm-hmm. right? It's a whole elaborate set of these tools, some of which are in place already, but it's very difficult to implement them anew in neighborhoods that do not have them yet. And that is the leadership challenge you're up against. So I wish you good luck, and I hope that I will be able to continue to praise Portland for its leadership on parking policy and not count you among the fallen. Thank you.
Mayor, can I just ask, since we have a an out-of-town guest who we regret you're disheartened, by the way, but we have waived the sales tax for the duration of your visit. we often, Alan, we often look to other cities for inspiration. Mm. So, and Commissioner Fritz the other day sent around an email, which I found fascinating, because she identified some cities around the world that we often look to as models of compact, livable cities mm-hmm. and environmental ethic that have a different view than we're debating about parking. Stockholm, Munich, and Vienna, 3 cities in particular, where they currently require 1 space per unit, 1 parking space per unit. Now, I understand that there's a range of views on this and reasonable people can disagree, but in light of the European experience, why have you concluded so dishearteningly that we're out of step?
Well, first of all, I question those statistics. Most European cities have hard maximums. In certain districts, they have minimums. But citywide, I just don't think that's right.
Even in the central business districts, this is, I can send you the study. If you want to send me an email, I'll send you the study.
Right, I'd be delighted to look at it and give you a response online.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Tamara DeRitter. I'm here as a resident. I have lived in Rose City Park for about 25 years. I'm a professional land use planner. I have served as the chairperson for the apartment parking task force. I'm also the co-chair for our land use committee for Rose City Park Neighborhood Association. You have received copies of those recommendations already. In the amendments that were popped up tonight or this afternoon, I would say no to Amendment 2 just because the neighborhoods have not seen it. We haven't had a chance to look at going back to the original transportation plan, transit plan. And the 15-minute transit plan at least shows where TriMet is investing in the future. The rest of the routes is questionable. We know those are going to be cut. So I would say the 15-minute corridors are the best. And also, 500 feet from the station areas is what had been submitted or provided to us. And 150 feet from station areas is new.